James Senegal once said, "Technology helps us become more efficient and productive, but our business still has a lot of art as opposed to strictly science." Are you tinkering, self-learning, self-improving, experimenting with home labbing? And do you want to become a skilled IT expert? Well, you've found your new home. This is the Home Labbers Podcast. On this show, we'll interview top experts and dig deep to learn how they got started and how they train their IT skills as a master martial artist in a Shaolin temple. And you know what? We're going to have fun along the way. This is the Home Labbers Podcast. And now your host, Vian Du.
All right, let's do this.
Johan, welcome to the podcast. So excited to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into home lab topic, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. I'm a technologist in the field of end user computing and artificial intelligence. Have been working in the EUC space for over 20 years. Always make the joke that I started in the late 90s, but my career actually started in December 99. And yeah, the first couple of years I've been working in the at a small system integrator that built WinFrame platforms of Citrix WinFrame, later MetaFrame, and other solutions like Enfuse. And a couple of years after that, I worked at a slightly bigger system integrator with a Microsoft focus, which basically moved on to the VMware space. And I've been working in the VMware world for, I would say since 2006 somewhere. Started out with the first like ESX 2.5, and later on basically moved towards the UC space since 2008, and with the first Horizon or the first VMware Vue platforms being released. Besides my work in VMware Technologies, I'm a FEMUG leader for the Dutch FEMUG. I'm a regular speaker at events like VMworld and FEMUG's E2 EVC. And I basically have a passion for nerdy stuff. So my labs, I've been building labs since 96, 97. And always use labs for different types of solutions. So I was kind of stoked to be invited for a podcast dedicated to home labs.
How did you get started with home labbing, and where did you get the idea?
I did after college I did an education on system administration. It took a year, like 1 year. And during that, that education, we got all sorts of, homework in, we needed to build netware, novel netware, servers, print servers and stuff like that. And, we had the equipment at school, but I wanted to, do a lot more from home as well. So, I had a job on Saturdays, and I basically saved all the money I could with that and with burning and copying illegal CD-ROMs, and basically spent all of the money to buy my first lab to basically play around more with technologies that that were educated at that school. And that's also how I learn. I don't learn by getting taught or doing courses. I basically learn by doing, and that's then a home lab is essential equipment if that's the ideal way of learning. And the first lab, I know it still, it was a 486 DX4, 120 megahertz. I think it had 16 MB of RAM, 8 or 16, and 600 megs of hard drive space. And yeah, booting, for instance, NT351 took ages, like a couple of minutes of booting. And then, yeah, you had an OS running. But it was, you know, it was fun playing around with technologies back then as well.
What was your first home lab project?
Well, that was the first system I used for home labbing and playing around. Also, like my first job at the Citrix integrator was a couple of years later. I think it was, in 99, obviously, but I think the first bigger home lab I bought was an HPE based ProLine machine, or back then it was not called, it was a net server. I think it was Pentium 2, something like that. And I was 17 back then at that job. And I was traveling around the country with an HP Jornada, like a mini handheld PC with a 64K, 56K modem in it. And wherever I was from a customer perspective, I just plugged the thing in to the wall socket, dialed into my lab, and on my lab was running WinFrame, or later MetaFrame, and Enfuse, so I could remotely test stuff that I wanted to, you know, before I configured that at customers or wanted to test it before it set in production. I just tested it at home. And we had a double telephone line at home. And so I just basically used one of the telephone lines to configure my my host to. And later that became a cable modem. But yeah, that was besides learning, that was the first time I actually used lab equipment to test stuff for customers. And yeah, it's still one of the things I, besides learning, what I do on my current lab as well.
How did you fund your home lab?
Well, the first couple of labs were 100% funded by saving money and, just saving money by, doing extra work or, saving money from the job that I had. Remember, I was 17 when I had my first full-time IT job. So, I think half of the money went into holidays and saving money for going on a ski trip or on a summer trip. And the other half basically went in my home lab. So I constantly invested in not just server hardware, but also client hardware. I started blogging about topics such as home labs in 2014. And that's also when I, started to get some funding from organizations, from vendors, which I also put 100% into the lab. I currently have a 100% a full-time job at IDQ, which the salary I get, I use to provide for my family and, the house and stuff like that. But, it's not a, secret that sometimes if I block something, OEMs or vendors just, give you a ring and ask if they could sponsor something. And, I use all of that money to constantly innovate my lab as well.
How your home lab looks right now and what do you have now there?
I did the VCDX certification a while ago, and I basically used the VCDX methodology to design my current home lab. And what I currently have, and I would say that 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago, I invested in a new Xeon D based lab based on Supermicro machines, to build a vSAN cluster and a vSAN cluster to run basically any type of machine on it. And I got a couple of GPUs in my lab because I do both a lot of VDI related stuff, which requires graphical acceleration, as well as AI related stuff. So I wanted to equip the entire lab with GPUs. And that ran for like 2 years straight. And the Supermicro machines and the Xeon D CPUs are relatively, they have a relatively low power consumption, but the GPUs don't. So as soon as a workload starts that that uses a GPU, especially deep learning workloads, it could easily like consume 300 watts on a per GPU basis, which for an entire lab is pretty, like three GPUs is that's a lot of money, to be honest. So I wanted to do something else. And I know that a lot of people in the community are investing in Intel NUCs because they're efficient from a power consumption perspective. They're relatively cheap. And they're still, while being small, they're relatively expendable with like or extendable with hardware, with NICs, stuff like that. One of the challenges that I had though was that I have a SFP plus switch, so a 10 gig switch, and most of the external NICs that you can find are Ethernet based, based on RJ45 plugs, and I wanted to have something else. So what I did was I invested in NUC 9s. So the Intel NUC 9 are a little bit bigger. And William Lamb posted a couple of blog posts about it. They're basically, I can show you. I don't know if the podcast is obviously just audio only, but this is actually a NUC 9. So what I'm showing here in front of the camera is a mini PC. The NUC itself sits on a PCI slot, so a PCI board, and there's a baseboard where it sticks in. And the same baseboard has two free PCI slots as well. So the one that I'm holding in my hand currently is my mobile lab for VR remoting, for instance. So it's equipped with an i7. But it also has a GPU installed in it, an RTX 3060, and it's relatively small. I can bring it everywhere I want. It has a gold type of PSU in it, and if you look at the overall power consumption, it's still around 30 to 35 watts. So that's nothing outside of the GPU, obviously. Now I got three of these without the GPU running most of my management workloads, and they're all equipped with Mellanox Smart NICs, so they are communicating over SFP plus networking, and they're all equipped with 64 gigs of RAM, running Intel based Optane drives for vSAN, and it has been running for 2 years straight now. Perfectly stable, running the latest versions of vSphere and vSAN. And if you purely look at that part of the cluster, yeah, I'm really, really satisfied with it. So it's fast. They all have six cores plus hyperthreading. So I got enough system resources to basically run all of the management workloads, Horizon, Workspace ONE components, even had like VRA running. I run like different lab environments next to each other. So for instance, I have, an OTA, or a DTA, Horizon environment running there as well. And it's all powered on without any, resource constraints, for instance, or resource, challenges. But next to that, I have a couple of other machines. So I sold one of these Xeon Ds before, and I had three of them, and I still have two, both running an NVIDIA RTX 6000, and those are basically my AI related boxes. So they're all attached to the 10G network, also through SmartNICs, and Yeah, I'm really satisfied with those machines as well. So if I do AI related testing, for instance, or I have a customer that I want to show a demo or something else, I just power on one of those machines, and then it consumes some power, obviously. And one of the that's basically my AI cluster, and then I have my beast, if I may call it like that. It's it's next to me. It's a an AMD based machine with an EPYC CPU in it. It is by heart, I think 4.5 gigahertz in speed, clock speed. It has 20 cores, insanely fast storage. It has also has an RTX 6000, and I basically use that for all the VR testing I do, or game remoting, for instance. I last year I presented at VMworld a session about remoting Star Wars Squadrons in over a Horizon. So I'm using Blast Extreme to remote the game to a like a tiny NUC, and it works really, really awesome. It's really fast. And because of the clock speed requirements, I chose AMD over Intel for this specific machine. And again, yeah, really, really satisfied with the all over performance that it's delivering. Now, from a networking perspective, everything is Ubiquiti. So I've got a management switch, which is 1 gig. I got my data center switch is 10 gigs. I have a Synology that I use for backups. So it actively create backups of all the VMs that I'm running. And I finally have the idea since a couple of years now that this is the lab that I could easily, you know, use for the next couple of years as well, because it's fast. It doesn't require a lot of power because the GPU related machines are all powered off when I don't need the workloads. Yeah. And it took some time before I, you know, was able to invest in it, but all in all, it's fast. It's stable. I don't have any driver related issues. And it still has enough resources to continue to even run the most modern workloads. I've been working with a customer for a while who ran AI related workloads for oncology research, and I wanted to build a platform that was capable of running those same workloads on a vSphere platform, with basically mainstream VDI GPUs. And in order to do so, you need to test a lot of that stuff. And I started working on that project a couple of months prior to the first COVID lockdown. And I was there on a daily basis. I, you know, first architected those workloads, but later on, when the first lockdown was announced, I didn't have remote access to the customer, so I needed to build something in my own lab, and I basically recreated the customer environment from a vSphere version perspective, the same NVIDIA drivers, the same GPUs, and basically rebuilt built the environment I wanted to run at the customer. So for instance, I built Ubuntu-based VMs running a Q profile, like a vGPU Q profile with enough frame buffer to be able, for instance, to run an inference workload or a training workload. And I created a CI/CD pipeline. So as soon as a data scientist wants to spin up a new workload inside, back then it wasn't Tanzu, but TKG. Inside TKG, it automatically assigns a GPU. It pulls the latest version of a Docker image from NVIDIA's NGC Docker repository, and runs both the the data set from the customer in it, as well as the latest version of their Python script, and fully automated. And it's something that I orchestrated in my lab. And because I'm using standardized DevOps methodologies, standardized tools, it was quite easy for me to give the customer access to my Git repository and let them build the same thing, the exact same thing, but in a matter of like 5 minutes. I think that's also where the power of a home lab comes into play, and especially when designing something with scalability in mind, it makes it a lot easier for a customer to then deploy something like that as well.
How much knowledge have you gained while having a home lab?
How do you quantify knowledge? I think that's a very hard question to answer. What I can answer, by the way, is that when talking about knowledge, learning, I learn by doing. And I've always done that throughout my entire career. Not just learning by doing. So I released two books in the recent couple of years, VDI Design Guide Part 1 and Part 2, which are two different books, by the way. And everything that's written in the book has been validated on my lab as well, in both books. So in the first book, I basically described the whole VCDX design methodology, specifically tied to EUC environments. And obviously, if you write something, you need to be sure that whatever you write is valid. So I validated everything on my lab for the first book. And for the second book, which is strongly focused on use cases and how to design use cases, weird ones even, like gaming on VDI or VR on VDI or data science on VDI, everything was validated in my lab. So I built, I learned, I've written whatever I did build, how I validated it, and it's also an example of how I basically study or how I learn for stuff like that.
What is the most memorable home lab story you like to share?
Well, it's one of the stories that I shared in my book as well. So I think it was probably 2002, 2003, something in that time frame. I worked at a small system integrator as a service engineer, and one of the tasks I had was on a regular basis to replace server hardware from customers. And I think back at home I had something like a net server with a Pentium 2 266 megahertz, and that was my main machine. I also used for remote login and to test Citrix related workloads. And at one of those customers, I got the opportunity to replace an LH 6000 by something new. An LH 6000 by HP back then was a monstrosity. And that was basically also the name I gave to the lab. The customer required us to destroy the old machine. But in this case, the customer just, gave it away. And they wanted me to have that machine. And obviously, I was like 20, 21, 22. I did earn some money, but, not that much that you can afford such a machine. So having a four-year-old LH 6000 at home, back then equipped with four CPUs, with a couple of gigabytes of hard disk space, probably like 64 gigs of RAM already, that was insane. It also had four PSUs. And that was the backside of the story, because the machine was really, really, really powerful. But I was still living in my parents' basement or in my parents' house in the attic. And so every time I switched on the machine, it generated that much noise and heat that we regularly had power issues or heat issues. And my mom even once thought that I was vacuum cleaning the attic. Well, it was just that machine turned on, and and that wasn't even the best part of the story, because the best part was at the end of the year when my parents received the utilities bill, and the thing had such a high power consumption that I think by heart I had to work 3 months straight to pay the my part of the consumption bill. And I think it was €900 or so, something like that. So it was quite the experience, and also something that I, with all the new hardware that I acquired later on, kept in mind. So power consumption is essential, and having a quiet lab is even more essential, because I don't live in a building with a data center with a quiet room with cooling in it, etc. So yeah, you need to keep that in mind if you want to build a lab and maintain it.
What scariest or most funny home lab story do you like to share?
Well, funny stories. Yes, I have some funny stories. So I'm a blogger. I've been blogging for a couple of years now, and one of the best read blog articles I wrote are the articles focused on labbing, specifically heat issues with the use of GPUs. So I wrote a couple of blog posts about how to create a custom fan duct for Tesla P4s and T4s, because those are great GPUs, but since they're purposely built for the data center, they also require data center related hardware, server hardware, proper server hardware with proper cooling inside the machine. They depend on that. And the Tesla P4 was one of the first GPUs I had in my lab. And because I don't have that type of hardware, and I just mentioned that I focus on having silent hardware in my lab, I decided to basically custom design a fan duct, attach a custom fan to it, and see how I could run a data center GPU in my own built lab. And to the listeners, they aren't able to see that, but back then, and I'm pointing to it, there's a 3D printer, and through the use of a CAD solution, I basically just printed the fan duct, and we're able to keep the temperature of the Tesla P4 to a 70 degrees average, which is perfectly fine. It still runs all power, high power virtual machines that could fully utilize all of the resources of the GPU, and also could perfectly run games and stuff on the GPU like that. So it is and will probably remain my best read blog post for a while, simply because I think that people are interested in the geeky side of things. Like, I like to nerd out on stuff like that. And dude, I actually presented this topic at multiple events at VMworld.
What do you also think about you when they see your home lab?
People generally don't see my home lab because it's well hidden in a dedicated closet next to me. But in general, I quite often talk about my home lab, and it's not something that you can easily invest in. So people tend to the jaw drops. Simply because they think, whoa, dude, how much did you invest in this lab, and why did you do that? Well, the total worth of my lab is relatively high, but it's not something that I invested in in total, all at once. It started out small, and I just added more hardware. And, you know, I wrote two books, and those two books got some, you know, some sales, and all of the income I got from the books were again spent in my, well, both in my home lab as well as my home studio. So like you, I have a Rodecaster here, and a good camera. And, so I'd like to, I've learned a lot while writing the books. I've earned some money, put the money back in my hobby, which is my work and my lab, which ultimately, you know, constantly generates money because I like to write about the NVIDIA related stuff. NVIDIA was so nice to, for instance, to ship me a T4 because of my work on the P4. And that's how I think, that's a part of how my lab got bigger and bigger.
What is a home lab for you?
Well, that's, it depends on, you know, how you use a lab. And, one of the things that I also do, for instance, I have a couple of NVIDIA Jetson Nanos, and those run some IoT related workloads. And one of them does image recognition on my Nest cameras. So I have a video stream importing from the Nest camera into the Jetson Nano, and the Jetson Nano does object recognition. And that's also part of my lab. So a lab is probably something that, you know, lets you run the workloads that you want to learn, the applications or the services or the solutions that you want to learn about, but also you want to test or require from a work perspective or something else. So yeah, but it could also be a service that you subscribe to. So one of the things that I, since I'm in the EUC space, specifically VMware EUC space, I do a lot of work with VMware Workspace ONE. And VMware has a test drive service which lets you create a sandbox, a production-like sandbox, which has all of the features that you need from a digital workspace perspective. So I have Workspace ONE UEM fully configured for myself. I have Workspace ONE Access, Intelligence. I even have like a Dell Boomi or a Boomi tenant. I have an IBM Watson subscription for the Workspace ONE personal assistant. I run a Office 365 developer account from an Azure Active Directory perspective and link that to Workspace ONE, and all of those online services don't cost me anything, but it's an essential part of what I do and what I want to show at customers from a functionality perspective, but also what I would like to test. If, for instance, a customer has some kind of security requirement or they want to, run some, have some challenges with their deployment of Windows 10, for instance, or want to do something from a Windows 10 perspective when looking at the integrations with Workspace ONE, I can easily test that in my lab since, well, the subscriptions are tied to me and I can use all of them. And I got some of that the hardware that the customer is using as well. And again, that makes it a lot easier to do customer-related work and to learn about it.
What one piece of advice would you give for beginner home labbers?
Well, there's not one single advice, I think, but what surely helped me is to use a design methodology if you're going to design a home lab. And for instance, my previous lab was one two iterations of my lab before this one was one single monstrosity of a machine with, I think, like 256 gigs of RAM and 4 terabytes of SSD storage, a massive, I think it was 24 core Xeon CPU, and it was running 24/7, which basically worked for most of the workloads. But When I started to write the first book, I wanted to do something with VCN. And then adding two or three of these same machines to a cluster is relatively expensive. So the lessons I learned there was to like start small and think if you want to scale out. If you want to scale out your lab, then for instance, start with an Intel NUC. It's powerful, it's relatively cheap, and you could add more NUCs of the same generation to the lab to create a cluster. So yeah, I would definitely take that into account. Also look at your home situation. If you have a decent income and don't really care about power consumption, buy something that's that fits that situation. But in my case, we started to kind of rebuild the house, and I have a decent number of solar panels on top of the roof. So I wanted my home lab to be neutral, power efficient, but also power neutral in terms of the environment. And that's something that definitely succeeded.
Johan, thank you so much for joining and have a wonderful day.
Thanks for having me, and good luck with the podcast.
You've been listening to the Home Labbers Podcast. Our passion is to interview the leading IT experts and get tech enthusiasts all the information they need to become an expert. So if you run at-home enterprise hardware and software, and you like tinkering and self-learning, then you've found your new podcast. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit up the website at viondu.tech, on Twitter at #viondutrending, and #homelab. See you next time on the Home Labbers Podcast.